welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So again, I'm trying to lay out kind of a full spectrum argument here about what's going on in the world and what's actually motivating a lot of the things that we're seeing occur. So, you know, we start with video of an Indian guy explaining that morality is not universal. And what Americans think is just natural law is, in fact, a very specific set of, you know, moral principles that only apply to Western countries, Western morality, which is actually Christian morality, but only really in Western white-dominated countries. And outside of that, like, those values are just not held by most people. Maybe some of them are, but certainly not the whole swath of, you know, deeply held beliefs that we have about fairness and objectivity and all this sort of stuff. And that same thing applies to Israel. And that's just obviously true because it's a matter of religion. Religion is a moral framework, and a different religion means a different moral framework. So then you have Tucker expounding on the hypocrisy of neocons and Israel firsters that will defend to the death the right for Israel to remain a Jewish ethnostate while decrying white ethnostates as the greatest expression of evil. Okay, another glaring hypocrisy that is not perceived as hypocrisy by them, since it's not a universal belief that they hold about ethnostates. Then you've got Lee Zeldin, Jewish guy, very Jewish identity oriented. It's very important to him. He's very Israel first. He's in all of the Jewish exclusive caucuses, you know, demeaning and denouncing somebody for being part of an all-white country club, since it's, you know, popular and acceptable to insult and attack white people, especially if you're presenting yourself as white, which is what we saw with the article from that Jonathan fellow who basically said, I'm white and all of us whites need to collectively allow ourselves to be killed or actually actively commit suicide, you know, to pay for our past transgressions. And then you've got the appointments that are made. And what's actually being created here, and which is being revealed in a strategic way. And I do believe that they are sort of boiling the frog here. They're slowly but surely inculcating us into this reality. It's like, yeah, Palantir is going to be in charge of everything. Don't worry about why. Yeah, Alex Karp is, yeah, he's going to be like kind of like a unelected king, I guess, but like that's fine. And that's sort of the structure that we're working with, is that there is a undeclared, unofficial, obviously unelected, nobility in operation. And you'll see this over and over. This is why we talk about things like Wikipedia hopscotch. Go find who is the kid of who. Go find, you know, whose lawyer Anthony Blinken's stepdad was, right? Go find, just go scroll through the Epstein list for a little while. See what connections you come across there. And so it's not nobility in the traditional sense, where a power, an authority, a throne is passed on directly to the firstborn son. It's more of a corporate nobility, where people at the head of these important organizations or important industries or whatever are chosen from a few specific families. And will always be somebody from one of those families, but you kind of got to prove yourself. Like that, whoever, like those people in those families, they got to go to the right colleges that they always get in because, of course, and, you know, they got to sort of check the boxes and fill out their CV, but eventually, you know, they're basically guaranteed the spot. This is the case with the likes of Ron Lauder, and his son-in-law just happened to be the person put in charge of the Fed. Like, what a coincidence, right? And so, of course, this is sort of the globalist ruling class, the Epstein class, that Donald Trump is serving relentlessly. And we just heard Ben Shapiro, you know, brag about the fact that TikTok was being censored now that Donald Trump forced China to sell to Israel in exchange for taking 600,000 Chinese students, both hurting America and benefiting Israel, the perfect combination. And of course, Donald Trump was instrumental in getting CBS sold to the Ellisons. The Ellisons, of course, another major, like, kingpin family in all of this. The Pritzkers, the Ellisons, the Zeldins, probably, if I had to guess. And so 60 Minutes was forced, basically, to be sold to this utterly incompetent bimbo, Barry Weiss. 60 Minutes journalist decries spread of corporate meddling and editorial fear as Barry Weiss fires a well-respected and long-working journalist for not being sufficiently deferential and supportive of Barry Weiss's particular ethnostate, Israel. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is Glenn Greenwald talking about this woman who was fired by Barry Weiss for not being pro-Israel enough. Let's watch.
Now, the question is, who is this person that Barry Weiss just elevated to all international coverage for CBS News after firing a woman who was too balanced on the questions of Gaza and Iran, wasn't devoted enough to Barry Weiss's agenda of state TV for Israel? I need to show you who she is. I was even shocked. Even as much as I know Barry Weiss, I've been writing about Barry Weiss. I know Barry Weiss. I know exactly who she is. She's been trying to get people fired who are insufficiently supportive of Israel or critical of Israel since her days at Columbia, despite rebranding herself as an icon of free speech and leaving the New York Times by claiming the New York Times is illiberal because it suppresses views that deviate from its orthodoxy. So ironic, since that's exactly what she's there to do at CBS News and is doing. So I just need you to see this, who this person is that she just put in charge of all international coverage for CBS News after firing the longtime London editor because of concerns about her coverage of Gaza and Iran. Here's Barry making the announcement on X yesterday. Incredible news out of CBS News this morning. Incredible, incredible. Shida, that's Shida Rice, joins us as foreign editor. Shinji has it all. She's a scoop hound reporter, a brilliant editor, and a clear-eyed leader. She's also curious, dogged, exacting, and tireless. More here. Okay. Shinda is none of those things. What she is completely embedded in the Israel First community in the United States and has proven that she exploits and abuses her journalism, often alienating her colleagues, to serve the interests of Israel, which is what CBS News is for, which is what the Ellisons are there buying up media to do. I just can't believe what a caricature Barry Weiss chose. Like, choose someone more subtle. So she lives in Tel Aviv with her husband, Dov Weiss, and she has been involved very recently in a major journalistic scandal. You may recall that there was reporting that the UN Agency for Human Rights, UNRWA, that operates in Gaza, that was the only agency feeding starving people in Gaza, delivering medicine, was accused of being part of Hamas, basically. This came from Wall Street Journal reporting. It was a big scoop. It actually led the Biden administration to cut off funding for UNRWA by claiming it was part of Hamas. This all came from the Wall Street Journal. The editor of that story was Shinda Rice. And the problem is that it seems to have collapsed completely, even according to the Wall Street Journal.
All right, so do you understand that? Do you understand what they just said? So this woman that Barry Weiss just, she fired a well-respected and, you know, a 20-year veteran of CBS News because she wasn't sufficiently pro-Israel. So she hired a woman who's Israeli, lives in Tel Aviv. And it's like, he's like, I don't know why she would be this blatant. It's like, because why not? Because what are you going to do? Stop her from doing it? You're anti-Semitic. Sorry. So of course that's going to happen. And the woman she hired is a woman who is a mercenary journalist. She uses journalism to achieve war ends. Do you understand that? That Israel wants to take Gaza, so they want to kill all of the Palestinians, so they're starving the Palestinians. UNRWA, the UN aid organization, was giving food to the people they were trying to starve. And so in order to stop them from giving food, they came up with a fake lie that this woman wrote in an article about UNRWA being Hamas so that people in America, who I'm sure know the truth but need an excuse, like, this is the way it works. Like, hey, UNRWA is feeding the children we're trying to kill. This is interfering with our war aims. We need an excuse to shut them down. Okay, I'll write an article saying that they all work for Hamas. Thanks. Now I'll shut them down saying, oh my gosh, they're all Hamas. It is a total fabrication, a total lie. But that's the way journalism is used in war to achieve war aims. Lie about the people helping your enemies so that America has an excuse to cut off the aid to the innocent children you're trying to kill. So this is what's motivating them. They see themselves as being a, you know, functionary of the Israeli government and the Israeli military, and they use their journalism to achieve Israeli war aims. And so that's what Barry Weiss is doing, and that's what Donald Trump helped her doing. And that's what Larry Ellison is involved in doing, because that's their people. That's their motivation. That's their ultimate loyalty. And then you have this, and this is pretty interesting. So we'll start with this one. I don't even know how to pronounce this name on X. Kumashun says, Bangladesh just announced they plan to send Japan 6 million workers. Bangladesh plans to send Japan 6 million workers. Now, if you don't know, Bangladesh used to be called East Pakistan. It's in India. It's a little, it's a province in India that is essentially Muslim, but it, and so it became its own nation, but it's essentially Muslim Indians live in Bangladesh. And apparently they're sending 6 million of them to Japan. Why would Japan, which is functionally an ethno state right now, why would it open its border to 6 million migrant Muslim Bangladeshis? What would possibly compel somebody to do that? Because they've got robotics. They might have an elderly population, but, you know, somebody commented on that. 6 million Bangladeshis legitimately will do more damage to Japan than either of the nuclear bombs. It will disrupt it forever, right? That's what happens when you change a country's demographic. It never gets back. And of course, the Japanese government just met with Bangladesh officials yesterday, and the news came out today. Japanese minister seeks faster progress on key projects in meeting with PM Tariq. And so then the person that posted this, or Global Observatory posted this, I thought this was sort of an interesting breakdown, because often you'll hear these sort of, attempts to obfuscate who's compelling this type of inexplicable action. Right. Japan, beautiful place, ethno state, which is one of the reasons why they're so capable of managing things. You know, it's stuff like Tokyo has like many times more population than New York City and runs at like a quarter of the budget as New York City. Look up the stats. Tokyo and New York. Tokyo has like tens of millions more people, but runs on like a quarter of the budget. Because they aren't having to spend a bunch of money on people spraying graffiti and trashing the place and destroying the subway. And I mean, it's like Tokyo, you can eat off the floor in the subways and not be sick. You can leave your bike on a sidewalk for days on end. Nobody's going to steal it. They don't have all the problems that we have, many of which come from the diversity that we're supposed to think is our greatest strength. And so, when people look at this and they go, hey, look, it looks like there's a lot of like Jewish groups that are behind all of the migration push. And they seem very proud of it and patting themselves on the back for their successful campaign. And then you're told, no, you can't blame. It's the liberals. It's the left. It's the whoever else they want to blame. When it comes to Japan, it's an interesting question. As Latoria puts it, what are the, quote, everybody but the Jew reductionist saying about Japan being flooded with blacks and browns, with foreigners? It can't be the left. Japan is a one-party state, LDP, and this party would be far right in Europe. It couldn't be pathological altruism. The Japanese are known for being xenophobic, even by East Asian standards. You can't blame Christianity or liberal female voters, often the whipping boy or people that this is blamed on. The answer in Japan is the same as it is in the White West. We all lost World War II, and now we're at the mercy of Jewish international finance and the violence of their Washington Empire. All of the analysis beyond that is proven wrong by the day. Is that wrong? I don't know. Seems to make sense to me. Now, one interesting wrinkle in it is that the LDP, the Liberal Democrat Party that has run Japan for the last 100 years, was actually founded by the CIA in furtherance of the Project Phoenix drug running operation that created the Iran-Contra scandal. So, and it's well known, acknowledged on the Liberal Democrat Party Wikipedia page. It says it was founded by the CIA with a big influx of CIA money. So it is America as the functionary throughout all of this. But it kind of struck me because the prime minister of Japan is supposed to be this far right person. she was called like the Trump of Japan and people made a big deal out of it. And then she came to America and met with Trump and was very, you know, fangirling over him and loved him. She's almost like a Japanese female Javier Milei with like her exuberance all the time. But I remember when she came to America, she had two particular meetings. She met with President Trump in the White House, and then she met with the real rulers of America. And it was funny because I asked Grok about this. I was like, I think I remember when she was here, when the Japanese prime minister was in America, I was like, didn't she meet with like Miriam Adelson? So I searched Grok and I said, who did she meet with? Who did the prime minister of Japan meet with? And Grok is like, she met with Donald Trump. She had a state dinner and she met many people while at dinner with Donald Trump. And I had to be like, okay, but didn't she meet with like Miriam Adelson and stuff? And Grok's like, oh yeah, yeah, you're right. Actually, she did, totally did that. This was a former dinner reception that followed the bilateral summit. The dinner was not a private one-on-one meeting between Takaichi and Adelson. It was a large group event with U.S. and Japanese officials plus American business and tech leaders, including Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, and Masayoshi Son, the SoftBank CEO. Some of these attendees, Adelson, Karp, and Fink, are prominent Jewish Americans, though official coverage focused on broader mix of political donation. So she met with the public-facing ruler of America, and then she had a private dinner with the actual rulers of America. And perhaps it was something discussed at this dinner that led to Japan almost immediately opening up its border to millions and millions and millions of incompatible foreigners. It's pretty interesting. They're not liberal. They're not Christian. They don't have like a problem with, you know, liberal, progressive, socialist brainwashing of their children, telling them to hate themselves. What could explain the sudden desire to destroy their own demographic makeup? And does it have anything to do with the fact that apparently Miriam Adelson, Alex Karp, and Larry Fink met with the prime minister of Japan days before that decision was made? I wonder. I really do. I mean, I don't. I know. I'm pretty sure. So then we get to London, UK, Europe, and Australia. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but the discrepancy in response between the continuous, practically innumerable examples of white British people, girls especially, being attacked, killed, raped, murdered by hostile immigrants, the reaction in that situation versus the reaction when two Jewish people are stabbed, even though they survive, fortunately, by a schizophrenic Somali person. So we'll go to clip number 13 here. This is a news report in England about this terror attack that is inspiring just like fundamental changes in the entire, you know, UK justice system. This is clip 13. This is about the stabbing of the Jewish people in UK. Let's watch.
Who has been charged with the attempted murder over the stabbings that took place in Golders Green, North London. Two Jewish men there has been remanded in custody after appearing at Westminster Magistrates Court. We'll bring you more on that with our correspondent who has been camped outside Westminster Magistrates Court this morning. So we'll get more with her shortly.
Okay. So the interesting thing about that coverage right there, the Golders Green stabbing, is she says they've now remanded into custody the man who stabbed the two Jewish men. Here's the thing, though. The guy stabbed three people. He stabbed two Jewish guys and a Muslim guy. But when they report it, they literally don't even mention the Muslim guy. Because that might make you think maybe the guy wasn't motivated by anti-Semitism. So maybe all of the measures taken to combat anti-Semitism as a consequence of this stabbing aren't actually accurate because he wasn't just stabbing Jews. He stabbed a Muslim guy as well. So they literally just ignore that guy. They just say, yeah, he stabbed two Jews. That guy who stabbed two Jews, he's been arrested. No, he also stabbed a Muslim guy. They don't even bring that up. That's a little suspicious, isn't it? It's a little weird. It's a little bit of narrative crafting right in your face there. Man appears in court over attempted murder of three people in London knife attack Essie Solomon, accused of stabbing two Jewish men in Golders Green, and Ishmael Hussein in South London. But they completely ignore the attack against the Muslim because that would cause a wrinkle and a discrepancy in the otherwise very solid narrative being spread that this was an anti-Semitic attack and fighting anti-Semitism is the only way to stop something like this happening again. Now, as you know, as you should know by now, this has happened over and over and over again in the UK, only not against Jews. And yet they'll arrest you for talking about it if you're white and if it's an attack on a white person. As people point out, where was this sort of coverage for Wayne Broadhurst, another person stabbed by a Muslim? White people are targeted, killed, and raped every day, but if you attack a random Jew and the press acts like it's 9/11, and it's all these headlines from the Mirror, the Daily Mail, everywhere, anti-Semitism out of control, terror on Bridge streets, the Jew hate is out of control, terror attack on UK Jews. Okay, nobody even died. Not to downplay it, I'm sad the guys got stabbed. I'm glad they didn't die. But this is what I'm talking about. It's not like, oh, white people get stabbed. It's not that big of a deal. Jewish people get stabbed. It is. White people get raped and murdered and blown up and destroyed, and it's don't look back in anger. Jewish people get stabbed with a nail file, and it becomes a, you know, wall-to-wall coverage for a week. Now, interestingly, the guy who did the stabbing had actually already stabbed people before, but they weren't Jews, so it was fine. The guy stabbed two cops, then they gave him citizenship in the UK, then he stabbed two Jews, and now it's a big deal and a big issue. But he already stabbed two cops, and they gave him citizenship in exchange for that. So then you have stuff like this. The government has announced an extra £25 million to increase police patrols and security in Jewish communities. So nothing like this ever happened to white people. When the Southport riots occurred, when the Southport protest occurred after the murders, they're basically told anybody, you know, standing up for white people is a terrorist themselves and will be arrested. And they did. They arrested people like mothers and fathers for, you know, accidentally posting inaccurate information on Facebook. They cracked down like knowing about the crime was a crime in and of itself. Not the case when Jews are attacked. Again, if it was both, if it was, hey, white people got attacked, we're sending £25 million, we're going to have police patrols, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen to you. Great. Wonderful. Hey, Jews got attacked, we're going to send $25 million to them too. Great. Makes sense. Very equal, very just. That's not the case. And this is the case around the world, that anytime anything happens that can even remotely be associated with anti-Semitism, millions and millions and millions of dollars are given to the Jewish community to protect and arm themselves. And that never, ever, ever happens with Christians or white people. And this sort of goes with the BBC coverage that we just showed as well. Alex Jones, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'll just say you've done a badass job. And so is the crew, and so are the listeners. This is really blowing up their face, and I love you, Harrison.
I love you too, Alex.
I've always liked you, but I really love you. We have come through this together, and the people have really been financially supporting us. We're going to hire a bunch of other hosts and stuff. Just keep supporting us. You watch. We will not let you down. We will fight like the devil against the devil.
Amen. Love you, brother. Great job. Amen. Thank you very much, sir. All right, folks. And we only got about a minute left here, but I hope you're enjoying our new studio. It's looking great. We got these new cameras up. It's looking awesome, Alex, honestly.
And we got big ones. You know, the bigger ones getting built.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the secret Death Star. We don't talk about that.
The second Death Star. That's right.
It's going to be better than the first Death Star.
I'm excited. And I'm trying to like.
I feel so good.
I know, but I'm not trying to downplay it because it's crazy what happened to us. But at the same time, it's like a wet blanket's been lifted. It feels great.
And the listeners, I thought, they knew it was real, but we survived so much they didn't take it serious. Now, majors. Support, it's over the top.
Well, good, excellent.
Hey, you've been here. There ain't none of this fake, man.
It's not fake.
I'm too much of a wild man, so arrogant. You think I got energy in my processor to be fake, bro? Great job to the InfoWars crew.
Well done, everybody.
And that means all the listeners and viewers. You're a bigger crew than you know it. You're the whole damn shooting match. Thanks to you.
Amen. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com to make sure we never stop. Thanks for being here. We'll see you on Monday.
Because of God's providence, I was.